Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Dr. Homebrew. And we're back. This is our, our first 2023 show, I believe?
Yeah.
Cheers to that, everybody. Yeah. Did I say 22 or did I say 23? Did I screw that up?
No, it's 23. You said it right.
Okay, good. All right.
It's the year after I got COVID.
You did end up getting COVID.
But also the year I recovered from COVID. Yeah.
Hey, man, those don't always match up. So I'm glad they do this time, man.
Yeah. What a way to end last year and start this year, I tell you.
Yeah, that's no fun, man. That's no fun. But I'm glad you came out of it. And, and here we are drinking some beers, right?
If my score sheets are off, you'll know why.
No. There you go. Yeah, everything's a zero. I don't get anything. I don't understand. Shar, do you have any HIPAA things you want to reveal to? Or?
Well, that would probably compromise your medical privacy, so no.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, great. Any maladies or deformities you want to expose?
Well, where's the camera? Yeah, no. Let's look at this.
Okay, yeah. Let me stand up. No, I have pants on. I can't actually show you anything. Welcome to the show, everybody. We have two beers for you. One is a commercial beer because we like commercial beers here. This is from Buck Wild Brewing Company. It is a pale ale. And we've had these guys on the session before. They make good beer. I actually really like it. Their place is pretty nice, too.
Yeah, there's local here in Oakland.
Yeah. They make good stuff, man. Pale ale. So that's good. We'll drink. That's a 5.5% beer. And you know how I love me a good pale ale. And then we have a hazy IPA from Brian Cooper. Try number 3, I think it is.
I think this is Rev 3. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We'll see. How do you think
Cooper just likes making you drink hazy IPA?
Yeah.
How do you think you did on this one?
Well, I won't. If you already judged it.
I have not judged it.
Yeah,
there was
a slight change in the way it came out because of a mechanical issue. Basically lost a little water and it came out stronger than the last batch. But I also changed a couple other things. I don't know. It might be back to the drawing board, but we'll see.
Okay, we'll see. I love it, man. I'm drinking this. I finally got my hands on some cold IPA from Sully from 21st Amendment.
Nice.
Nice.
Brew for your die cold IPAs, which is sort of like an IPA lagered, like a lager ferment, like a Pilsner malt base kind of thing. You know, an IPA. Yeah.
Brew for your die cold. Like if you want to die cold, just go to Minnesota, right?
I was asking on my other show on Years Up, Taryn was doing the live read of that. She goes, brew free or die cold IPA. And I just started laughing. Like, yeah, that's it. Brew free or die cold. That's exactly what the beer name is.
Brew.
Well, it is free time. So if you're going to die cold, this is the right time of year to do it.
I guess it's easy to do it this time of year, I suppose. But yeah, it's a good beer, man. It's very smooth. And the hops aren't super aggressive like you get with an American IPA or a West Coast IPA. But I guess that's maybe what some people want. But they're not overly aggressive, if that makes sense. They're still there. There's still some sharpness to it. But not bad. It's pretty good.
Right on.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to drinking one later on.
Yeah. Grabbed it at BevMo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's good, man. Very light color, too. You could mistake that for a Pilsner, for sure.
Yeah. They have some of the characteristics of a lager. Like that shine, just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And the there's a lot of hop flavor also, which I don't want to say you don't normally find, but I don't know. It seems like it's more flavor forward than aroma forward. Which I think is a little bit a differentiator between, you know, West Coast IPAs and stuff like that. And this one. Yeah, it's good. It's tasty stuff. So check that out if you can find it. But before we move on to the Buck Wild Pale Ale, I wanted to thank our fine sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com right now and sign up for their homebrew club program. It's a fivestarchemicals.com/homebrew-club-program. And what that does is it signs you up, gets you in the little mailing list they have. You can get discounts on PBW. You can test out products from Five Star before they're even on the market. And if you want free monthly educational sessions to up your homebrew game, join the Five Star Homebrew Club program. It's free to use. It's easier than Star San, right? Which is pretty easy to use. Actually, I just used some Star San last week. I brewed last weekend.
It's easier than making a TikTok video.
Well, yeah. I brewed on Sunday. I brewed an ESB. On the Robo Brew, on the Brewzilla. And it was super simple. It was 8 pounds of Golden Promise and 0.5 pound of British Crystal 45.
Okay.
With the West Yorkshire yeast from Y Yeast. And then some Fuggles and some EKG. Threw it in there. Worked pretty good.
Yep. How's that fermentation going for you?
It's going good, man. It was maybe a little slow. I don't know. I mean, I finished about 6 o'clock at night. And then I woke up in the morning and it was going. I didn't tighten the clamps down on the fermenter because like, there was nothing, man. The blow off bucket was just still. I'm like, oh no, what's going on? And I shook it and the bubbles came out. I'm like, okay. So I just tightened everything down, waited a couple minutes and shook it again. And then it just go blub, blub, blub. So I just had an air leak. Interesting. Yeah, it's going well, man. Trying to keep it at 68, you know, and it's been a while since I've had to really dial in the conical. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute. The differential's two here seem to be up here, but anyway, I don't whole thing about it. But yeah, it's going good. I'm ready for it, man. I'm excited. It should come out about 4.2, which is very excellent for yours truly, and I hope to drink it all.
A nice spring drinker.
Yeah,
when spring ever comes.
Anytime. It's an anytime drinker. You kidding me? I'm so excited.
Do we have a spring brews festival to promote, or is there something going on with that?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
There is one coming up, which I found out about through the Concord Chamber of Commerce, of which I am a member. And it is a weekend in March in which I have my daughter. So I'm not going to be going to that, unfortunately. Mm. But it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Shark, turn yourself up a little bit, please.
Yeah. I'm all the way up. That's kind of strange.
There you go.
We poured homebrew at that one last time. There was a lot of fun pouring there with does, and a bunch of the Mad Zombers just came out, or a few of us anyway. Ran around there and caused trouble. It was fun. I even worked for a while at one of the entrances.
Don't do that. Don't ever work at a thing like that. Just say you're going to work and then don't.
I was just like getting to I didn't want to go beyond the point of like tasting and enjoying the beers. So I just stopped for a while. I was like, I'll work here for a while. Then I abandoned my post with reckless abandon.
Sure.
Anyway. Yeah. I had someone take over for me. It was good though.
That sounds great. Sounds great. All right. Let's get into this Buck Wild. What should we know about this?
Yeah. Well, so the reason that we picked this is I know one beer that we haven't covered is alternative fermentable beers. And that's beers that are made with other grains besides, you know, barley. And this brewery touts itself as California's original gluten-free brewery. So people that are, you know, celiac disease can't have the gluten.
Right.
This is something they can have. And, you know, just the aroma right off the bat, it's got a nice citrusy little tropical aromas in there. On the can, they're saying they're using Amarillo and Chinook hops, which is
I'm not getting the piney Chinook, but it's probably like the non-pioneer, maybe different harvest time version.
Yeah, it's almost like sometimes the hop flavor can be almost sweet rather than that piney resinous thing. And that's the version of Chinook I'm getting. It's like a sweeter hop, which I think works well. And I think you need that with, you know, because traditionally, like the non-gluten grains can have more of a lighter mouthfeel. And so I think this sort of helps that a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe they've been talking math. I have no idea.
Category would be 31A in the 2021 style guidelines. You can brew any beer with alternative grains. And again, it need not be a gluten-free beer, but this is a place where gluten-free beers would naturally land. You can make any style there is with other grains besides barley. And since wheat is a common ingredient, they list the alternative grains being like rye, oats, buckwheat, spelt, millet, sorghum, and rice. Kind of being added or used exclusively. So
right.
It's either contributing. So I guess, yeah, you can have some barley and accent it with other grains as well. But I think the focus needs to be on that grain and how you're using it. So I'm interested to get into the flavor on this beer. It's, the aroma is really inviting. It's just got a nice pale ale smell. Not really malty or anything like that, but it doesn't smell like there's anything out of place or weird in the malt.
Yeah, what I like about it is it doesn't smell, you wouldn't know, you smell this beer and you wouldn't know that it's,
yeah.
What is it, sorghum, buckwheat, you said? And I forgot already.
Millet.
Millet, okay, yeah. Millet, so it's
rice, buckwheat, yeah.
Hey, buckwheat's in there, I was sort of right. Oh. Yeah, you wouldn't know it, right? You just go, oh, this is just a nice smelling pale ale.
Jeez.
Which I appreciate, you know what I mean? Like, and that was always the hard part with these beers, with these alternative grain beers for a while, for a long ass time, is they just didn't smell like beer. They didn't taste like beer. They didn't act like beer in the glass or in your mouth or wherever. And it was always, it's almost like non-alcoholic beer. They needed to have that, like, you know, high watermark or that breakthrough to then go, okay, this is now what it is. You know what I mean? To sort of reset the general flavor palette of what a gluten-free beer can be. And I think they do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, and the flavor. So the malt comes across. Oh, Siri's trying to talk to me.
Wow.
The malt comes across in a different way than you would, expect for exactly, barley. But it's... I'm trying to decide if I'm getting something like a little bit phenolic from the hops or a little medicinal or something. There's something a little bit like kind of sharp in there, but I'm not sure if it's a malt component.
I think it is chlorine-ish. Chlorine to J. I'm not saying it's chlorine, but that's what it reminds me of.
Right.
And it's right at the top and then it goes right away and you sort of forget about it. And it's just nice, lighter body pale ale is there, so don't mind it.
Yeah,
yeah, right. I don't disagree with what you're saying, JP. I didn't get this when I first was drinking this beer, but yeah, I now that you've kind of put that in my head, I can't kind of get away from it.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
But the rice is lightening up the body a lot, and there's not much in, malt wise to hide behind. It's not like overly sweet. It's nice and dry like a pale ale should be. So that's good, man. If I was lactose, intolerant of glutens and things like that, I could see myself sipping some of this. This is very, very flavorful. The hops come through nicely.
Well, so what do you? Okay, so millet is a grain, rice is obviously a grain, and buckwheat's obviously a grain. What do you think about the blend of the three? Like how if we want to do this at home? Because generally you just get like, oh, this is all buckwheat or, this is all, because I've made an all buckwheat beer and it is watery. It tastes like shit. But you got the blend in here to sort of like give a balance, because we've also had rice beers and I don't know if I've had a millet beer before, but you know what I mean? How do you set that up? I mean, it's in order of how much ingredients that are used, right? So it's mostly millet, I guess, and then rice and then some buckwheat for maybe some flavor. I've also heard about people using buckwheat, kilning it like a crystal malt. And that's how you get the color.
Yes, it seems like the buckwheat is probably what's standing out here a little bit. So I'm not sure, but yeah. I'm not really used to too much to what the flavor of buckwheat or millet specifically would be. I think millet's probably fairly neutral, grainy, and rice is going to be kind of non-existent. Pretty much, or yeah, it's not strong enough to have any kind of sucky like flavors or anything.
No.
It's got a grainy impression. It does.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it really does. Yeah. I wonder if the rice is for like that sweetness, because that's why when you use sake, you use the special sake yeast, which I guess I heard is a mold. I forget now. You know what I mean? Because it doesn't really ferment that well. So I wonder if it's there for like residual sweetness.
Yeah, it's a good point. And these beers need something. If you're not going to have gluten, which is, I'm not a biochemist, but gluten seems to me like it's one of those long chain starches, sugars, molecules that gives body to beer.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not going to be there, you need something else to give you some perception of body. Like you were saying earlier, JP, with the buckwheat beer that you made, it was good, but didn't have any substance to it.
Right.
So you have to have, and that's probably their trade secret process. I suspect they have a trade secret process. And the use of the millet, the rice, and the buckwheat together in some proportion and in some order probably has a lot to do with why the body is the way it is with this beer.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the body, Char?
I like it. I think it's still, it's on the low end of body, but it's not, it's on the low end of body the way that, say, a Pilsner can be on the low end of body.
Yes.
It's not one of those, it's not one of these alternative fermentable beers where there's literally no body and you drink it and it's like, did I drink a thing just now? Was that a thing? You need to have something in the beverage, and whatever they're doing, they have some decent, I think, low body in here that goes well with this style of beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Good carbonation too.
Yeah, I like the carbonation here.
In case you didn't hear that burp, that nice giant ripper,
spritzy.
All right. Well, what else? What's next on the old score sheet for this guy?
Well, I'm thinking about how hard it probably is to make these and get the balance right. You know, I'm sure they had to work out that recipe carefully to get the balance of what they wanted in there. And another challenge is that a lot of gluten-free grains are going to be huskless, and the malts are, you know, just open and available. They're not also not going to have a lot of, if you can find a malted version of it on a homebrew scale,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not going to have a lot of diastatic power probably to convert itself. So, you know, how do you get it to kind of power up? You know, I mean, I guess the trick would be maybe to use it in a syrup of some kind, an extract that's also gluten-free, like a rice syrup or something. And it's going to give you some, that's already converted basically, and then add those in the steep. I don't know what you would do on a homebrew scale very well to get that. There's some good articles out there, and I'm glancing at one on BYO. It talks about gluten-free brewing. So, for people with celiac disease, it's, you know, definitely something worth pursuing. There's good commercial ones out there, but you know, the homebrewers that I know like a good challenge, and this would be one. If somebody could send us one of these beers, I'd love to taste somebody's homemade version of it and see how they did and talk about, you know, on the home scale what they did to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think Char, I think you're right. There was a lot of R&D in this, and I feel like on a commercial scale, you have that luxury of being able to do that. If that's going to be your the way that your breweries run, you got to sit and nail that thing. But I wonder if this is sort of one of those beers, the styles where a home brewer is going to maybe try once or twice and be like, well, because you can't really. The hard part about these is like if you give someone this beer and say, here, try this beer, they're going to come. And if they're not gluten intolerant, they're going to be like, this isn't a beer. It tastes weird. Yeah. And I think it's going to put a lot of people off if they try once or twice and go, it just doesn't really just tastes funky, because you're never going to get it to taste like a beer. And that's one thing you got to learn if you're doing this. If you're brewing gluten-free beers, it will never taste just like beer. It will be good, but it's something else.
Yeah, and I think this is a closer example than a lot of the ones in this space.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we were talking about the long chain stuff. I mean, looking at this is... Zoom is not really showing this. There's a decent amount of head here on this beer, which says, hey, there's long chain molecules in here, which most of these beers don't have. They ferment all the way out, like right away. So, yeah, I think it's one of these things where if it's a type of beer that you need to drink because you have celiac or something, then you just have to adjust your palate or just stop drinking beer.
Right. Right. And which would you rather do?
I don't know.
Another way to, you know, besides doing an alternative grain beer would be to make a technically reduced gluten beer and make a regular beer and then use something like Clarity Firm, which is found to greatly reduce the gluten in the beer. So if some people are just minorly sensitive to the gluten, sometimes they can get around with that. I think that's how like the Stone Delicious IPA is, you know, it's a regular beer that they use a fining agent to clarify it and get the gluten way down. They might have just accidentally discovered that. I'm not sure.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Do you guys get like I want to say like a pineapple juice? There's a juicy hop component to it, which is almost tart, but not really. Do you guys get that?
Like a pine. I'm getting kind of, when you say pineapple, I'm thinking pine, and I'm getting like a little pine from the hops.
I'm getting like straight up like canned pineapple juice. You know, use that for cocktails, and it smells almost like pineapple juice.
A little pungent, like juice-like in there. Not like in a sweet juice way, but and not really tart, but just like the bite that kind of like, you know, what's in the juice that kind of gives that the flavors without so much of the acid side of it.
Right. Yeah, it's the sugary. Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad.
I'm not getting that at all. Maybe it's just me.
Maybe it is.
If you guys are both getting it, then I'm going to say that you're right.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate that. All right. Where are we, Char? Cooper, are we wrapping up on this one?
Well, I will say, mouthfeel we kind of talked about a little bit, but I like that the body is nice and light. And this is a beer that's naturally probably going to be a little lighter in body. Mm-hmm. Those grains are going to attenuate out quite a lot more than, a malted barley mashed at a higher temperature. So,
right. Yes, definitely. But it's light, but it's not too light. It can be watery.
Exactly.
You can get these watery for sure, which I think is that blend.
Could they make an imperial stout with this and have it have the, you know, sweetness to stand up?
I don't know. How would you do that?
I don't know.
You'd have to boil for like 10 hours.
Yeah. Right.
And you'd have to use like, you'd have to, drop those hot rocks in or something and then use that interface where those rocks are so hot and you end up with long chain sugar formation right on the surface and near the surface of the rocks because the thermal gradient is so steep. But it would be such a pain in the ass.
Oh my God, for sure. I'm looking at their website right now. I'll let you know if they have a stout like that. Ooh, and they ship too. That's good.
Oh, interesting.
Anywhere in California.
Cool.
Very nice. And that is Buck Wild Brewing in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. They do a Mexican style lager, a fruited sour beer. Cool. They're not saying anything sort of dark. So everything looks, lighter bodied.
Any IPAs?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's an IPA.
I hear that's popular.
Ooh, they have a Kolsch on right now at their tap room.
Oh, cool. Might be worth a visit.
Hmm. Ooh, they have a cold IPA too. Speaking of cold IPA, three hazy IPAs, one hazy double IPA, two regular hazy IPAs and a West Coast IPA and then a dry hopped Pilsner.
Okay, so I'm wondering now on the IPA, the hazy IPAs, where are they getting their, their haze from? What grains are they using to do it? Or is it all yeast haze? Because a lot of those beers call for a ton of wheat and oats. Yeah,
but, for sure, dude.
I think maybe the gluten content in oats is low enough. Is it? I know wheat has so much gluten, but oats might be a little lower. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. You should go and find out.
It's not one of the ones listed for the style here, alternative grains.
Yeah.
And it's used in a lot of other beers. So, yeah. Good question. Need a scientist here to answer us.
There you go. So what do we think? So we said it's category 31.
Yeah.
What's the score? Because don't forget, we got a score and we got to see if this is a stylistically approved beer or not, which I think it is.
Yeah, it's a 31A. I'd say this is solidly in the upper 30s. It's very flavorful. It's as advertised, a nice American pale ale.
Yeah.
I'd say the same thing. I'd give this upper 30s.
I would even push into this short 40s.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I mean, for what it is and what it does, knowing my own trials and tribulations and a couple of the other commercial beers that I've had that are gluten-free, like this alternative grain, it's very hard to do to make it drinkable. And I think this is the most drinkable alternative grain beer that I've had. And I remember them being on the show. The beers were all great. So I would push 41. I'd go 41.
I think for the aroma, I would agree with you on, the level of the aroma and the hops in the aroma and everything. Just, again, you smell it, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between this and a regular grain beer.
Absolutely not.
Just in the flavor, there's something just like that little odd kind of note that's pushing out a little bit. That to me is like a phenolic, or you said kind of chlorine, like that's a little odd to me, but I don't know what that is.
No, I feel like it's just... a flavor from one of the grains. I feel like maybe it's a buckwheat flavor or something like that.
As I drink it, I'm kind of getting used to it. And it just becomes like, oh, okay, this is just this beer. It's good.
Right. Yeah. That's sort of what I'm saying. Like, that's what you have to do with beers like this. Yeah. You can't compare it to a regular beer because it's never going to be that. But this gets shockingly close.
They're not pushing it up towards, 6%, or it's just a nice 5.5%, smooth, easy drinking pale ale.
Yeah,
I'll probably drink this whole can. It's pretty solid.
There you go. All right, let's take a quick break, everybody. We're going to be right back on Dr. Homebrew with another one of Brian's bizarre hazy IPA beers. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back. What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers into Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered. Head over to GrogTag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. GrogTags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's GrogTag.com and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
Hey,
thanks for hanging on, everybody. Dr. Homebrew, we are back with a homebrew. I feel like it's been forever since we've had a homebrew on this stupid show. Brian Cooper with a Super Starry Haze IPA. Or is it Super Haze Starry IPA?
I think I called the one before this just Starry Haze, and then I was like, well, let's call it Super Starry Haze. But then my alternate name for it is Siganemo. It's like, picture the little clownfish with a cigarette hanging out of its mouth. It's just a combination of the starts of the hop names like Citra, Galaxy, Nelson, and Mosaic.
You are an interesting young man.
Thank you.
Well, Cooper, yeah, I'll tell you that.
I like Super Starry Sky because Brian's a superstar.
That's right. That's right.
I try.
So what iteration of this is this? How many times have you put us through this fucking torture?
It is the third one on the show, I believe. But yeah,
okay.
I've been trying for a long time to make an IPA and a hazy IPA that I've really been happy with. Because
you've been working on, it's like the same recipe. You've been sort of dialing it in for a while.
Yeah. And I try to follow my own advice and make, small changes at a time. So.
Yeah, well, if you can't trust the Dr. Homebrew, who can you trust? You know what I mean? Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, that is the haziest, chunkiest. It's not even chunky. I'm just kidding. Yeah. That is like
very, very okay.
Look at that. Yeah. I mean, the light is just bouncing right off of it. The closer you get to the light, the wider it gets. The yeah. light isn't even penetrating this thing. This is like the, you know, the deep, dark waters of the ocean.
Well, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, it's hazy, but it's not murky, right? It's not like the floaties and the yeast yes, and all the bullshit right. that people would have back when they started making these.
Yeah, I feel like when like the beers that I've had that are like this, that are hazy, that are flawed, if you will. It's another way to put it. Fine. Look like this. Like the ones that taste good, the ones that taste balanced, and the one that taste purposeful, they look like this.
Yes, well, already that's I a have good to sign. Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is I'll skip ahead just slightly. Like I just smelling
give
this,
it a 24.
Yeah. Like I'm drinking a Ghost Town hazy IPA next to this. And the malt character of this, there is some malt in the aroma. It's like you'd get from a Ghost Town or Original Pattern commercial beer. So that well done, Coop. It's good.
Oh, well, thank you. Maybe I'm getting closer.
Maybe we'll see. I don't know. Maybe we're luring you into a false sense of security. Ashar, why don't you go yes. ahead and start judging this beer?
Well, I won't start judging it because I judged it like an hour and a half ago. But rather than being incredibly pedantic yet again, I'll just start judging the beer. If on the podcast you could see Jason's face, oh God. All right, this is a, when I opened this up, this is a swing top bottle, like a Grolsch type bottle. And there was a very low hiss on swing top opening. And that is one of the things that you, one of the risks you run when you use a swing top. I they're not always great 100% of the time at keeping the carbonation in. Aroma, high level of tropical fruit and citrus hop aroma. I get a lightly bready malt in the background. No off aromas. Like I was saying, the aroma is in the ballpark of a professional beer you'd spend money for. I gave this 10 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. The color is light gold. Head is low with moderate retention. Cloudy without being murky. It looks like, as JP was saying, it looks like what a good example of the style looks like. Flavor, like with the aroma, I get a highly fruity hop flavor with citrus notes. I did get some low pith notes that probably are hop bitterness because this is not a fruit beer. Yeah, you're not chopping up, you know, orange peels to put in this thing. So
no, I mean, you could, I guess.
Yeah, you could, but it wasn't a declared ingredient, so I took that for hop bitterness. But it was interesting. You know, it's weird how sometimes that pith can come across like a hop bitterness in some beers that use stuff like that. And it's weird how interchangeable those things can be. Medium low soft malt, medium low bitterness, well attenuated, I thought. Finish is long and balanced toward hop flavor. 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel 5 out of 5, medium body. Low carbonation, probably from the swing top, no warming, definitely creamy, no astringency. I gave it an 8 out of 10 for overall impression for a total of 40, Coop. So,
Wow.
I really like this beer, and I think you're getting it dialed in to where you want it to be. I think the only thing that I would work on in this beer might be carbonation. And it's so bottle dependent with swing tops. You might be drinking one right now that is perfectly carbonated, and I might have had one that maybe blew off some of that carbonation via that gasket. But I think it's well done. I like the degree of bitterness. It's not a West Coast IPA bitterness, but there is a firm bitterness in this beer, and it's not just this flabby juice bomb with nothing but the hop flavor and aroma to it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very well done.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, the carbonation, it could be that it's a little bit low carbonated in the keg. And I didn't intentionally like push it up to try to enter it in the comps or anything like that. I just had it at a serving pressure. I poured it at our club's holiday party. At the time, I felt like it was a little pushing a little bit of hop burn. But as I'm tasting it now, it seems like that might have subsided a bit. I use a floating dip tube, mm-hmm. but when I carried it to the party and it got stirred up, it even the hops just float up into suspension. It's so hard to get a good clean transfer on this without a lot of, you know, hop matter getting through. And, you know, also without getting a bunch of oxygen in there. So I'm really careful about my transfers and I just try not to over transfer so I don't get too much hop matter in there. But that floating dip tube has been a lifesaver and it just keeps it right under the surface of the beer. And as it sits for a while in the keg, you can get down to the bottom and you finally start getting a little, you know, hop stuff coming through.
Well, business. Yeah.
But yeah, so the bottle I gave you, Brian, was bottled maybe a month ago. Mm-hmm. And the one I gave JP, I bottled this morning. So
interesting.
I don't know.
So you like JP that much more than me?
Well, I don't know. It's been sitting on the bullshit for a month longer.
I had one that I already had bottled up. I'm like, oh, I just need one more. But I was going to bottle two fresh, but I only mm-hmm. had one bottle in my freezer. And sanitized bottle in my freezer.
Even you can't finish the keg of this in a month.
So I,
you know, and that's all I'm getting out of this.
Well, I just put it on a tap on my kegerator. I tossed it in there and like, I'll let this settle down a little bit. But
there you go.
I'm kind of glad I did like kind of sit on it. Normally these you do want to drink fairly fresh, but
yeah,
sometimes maybe things like that hop burn can kind of die away. So my malt bill is pretty much the same.
Hold on. Am I going to get a chance to chime in first? Like we always do.
I'll let you do that.
Sure. Cooper's ready to talk about himself. Here's what I did for my beer, guys. Slow down. Gear down, big shifter. All right. Okay. Just relax. I'm just kidding. You know, I will say, you know, the hill I'm dying on is that hazy APA is an abomination and should be tortured to death. That being said, the aroma on this beer is wild. It is very good, very pungent.
Yeah.
And very inviting. It's a very, very good aroma. You know, it's up there with the best of the, and when I say the best, means something in this case. The best of the commercial beers that I've had of this style. It's very reminiscent of a commercial beer in that regard. It's bright, it's punchy, it's inviting, it's almost, I like the term juicy, but it's almost like juicy. Yeah. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, you know, it's fruity, it's unctuous, it's sort of like almost, you can almost feel. If you do it too long, it's almost like you can feel your salivate, your salivatory glands, your Italian glands in your mouth.
The salivatory, you know what I mean? Glands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it smells great. It's grapefruity, but sweet. The sweet grapefruity thing. Yeah. It smells wonderful. So great job. Cool. Full marks on that. The mouth feels pretty good as well. There's a little bit of creaminess, soft water kind of thing. But there is a fair amount of like hop bite and hop aggression that I sort of like, because I don't like that soft, pillowy mouthfeel bullshit. Part of the reason why I don't like hazy IPA, I don't like that mouthfeel. I don't like that texture. So this to me is a little more reminiscent of a West Coast IPA, like things that I understand. It's like two beers, right? The first beer is like, I don't really understand. It's like falling through a cloud. And then it transitions to like, okay, now I'm on familiar territory. My feet are on the ground. Now I know what's going on. It finishes a little aggressive for me. It's like a little too bitter, which I believe was your problem last time as well.
Yeah.
Was a little too aggressive. And I know you like your hop. So that's probably what that's about. But overall, I think this is leaps and bounds better than the other beers that you've served us, man. I think this is easily 38 to 42. It's very good. Yeah. The only thing that I would actually point to say change would be the aggressiveness of the hop at the end. That's it. Because they're bitey. They're a little crunchy, a little bitey. So if you can take that down 20%, it's 45, 48. It's great. It's a good beer.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how to do that. So, you know, I know there's a lot of different hop products on the market. In this one, I used you know, some cryo hops, but I also just used what I had around. I basically, the previous versions have been Mosaic Galaxy, all Mosaic and Galaxy. And I was like, well, I wanted maybe a little more hop complexity and a little more hop in general. So I brought in a couple other hops that I really, really like, which is Nelson Sauvin and Citra. And the Citra was the one that was cryo. I bought a bunch of little packs of that with the, you know, cryo. I understand you can get away with using a little bit less hop that way, but I used actually more hops overall. It probably, this batch probably has, and it's going to sound crazy, but it has like 10 ounces of hops in a 2 gallon batch. It's just insane amounts of hops. It's like 6 ounces of dry hops in a half sized batch, basically.
Wow, dude.
And I just, that's probably where that the bitterness is just, you're just getting so much hop matter in there that it's just, you know, I do a long whirlpool and I don't, it's only again like a 15 minute boil. I just do a short boil and I do a little hop addition towards the end of that boil in the last like 4 minutes or whatever, you know, and then the rest of the grains are all whirlpool. So, but yeah, it's pretty much equal parts Mosaic, Galaxy, Nelson, and Citra. And I just love all those hops and all the hops going in. Smell pretty good. I actually used some whole Mosaic that I had around in the boil. Like, I guess it was a 10 minute boil or a 10 minute hop addition. So there's a little, maybe I'm getting a little bitterness from that, but I'm sure I'm getting bitterness from the, the whirlpool and the later steps too. It doesn't just magically not come in. You get some.
Yeah. Well, you know, I disagree with JP here a little bit where I think the bitterness in this one is really good. And I like that it's not just this soft, flabby thing. Hazy IP doesn't have to have no bitterness. This has, I think, firm bitterness in the sense that like a Pilsner has firm bitterness. Pilsner's not a 80 IPU beer, but it's bitter. And I think this is kind of the same type of thing. And I like where the bitterness is right now.
But what I'm getting too is that, again, the hop burn, and I kind of feel it in my chest a little bit. As you drink it, I get this burn that kind of goes down a little bit and you feel it a little bit.
See, but I wonder if this is the month different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, and I imagine at the end of the keg, Cooper, you have a bunch of hop bung, hop smeg down there, right? So, yeah. I mean, that's gonna partake something into the beer, right? So I got a beer that's been sitting on that shit for a month.
I get some burn. If I swish it in my mouth real fast, I get a little bit of hop burn type stuff. Could be a carbonic, but I think it's more of a hop thing. And that's just from swishing it fast. So I don't know. But I think your point is excellent, JP.
Of course it is. Well, I mean, I only make excellent point.
There you go.
Yeah.
Did you hit the recipe, Cooper?
Well, here's the thing. I had a little mishap.
anytime anybody starts with "here's the thing," you know it's going to be great. Yeah.
I lost some water at the start of it. it was, you know, a 2.5 gallon batch, and it probably ended up being 2 gallons or thereabouts because I was aiming for like a 1066 gravity, but. You know, I was running the Pico Z and it was like, well, liquid is coming out. I'm like, oh no, my Pico Z is goofing up and I've got a leak or something. I've got to start this thing over or stop it. It's going to make a big mess. And you know, I've got like a pizza tray under the thing. So it'll collect a little bit of liquid coming out. But I think what was happening, I looked at it and it was just clear liquid. So what was happening was I mixed it and it's a very, very full, I'm trying to maximize the mash bin as you know, much as I can. I mixed the rice hulls in with the other grains I use really carefully and got it mixed pretty well. But it was just so kind of dense, I think, at the top that it just wasn't letting the water soak in. And a little bit was coming out over the top and dripping down the sides and into my pizza tray. But so I lost some and it increased the gravity by about 12 points above what I expected. So that, you know, it made it, you know, like a... well, what did the ABV come out at? It was like a 7.4.
Wow.
Prior ones being like a 6.5, which was my target. It didn't It didn't finish out as low as I thought it might. It finished at like a 1018 from a 1074, which I think in a way might be helping it a little bit too, because these can stand a little bit more body than you want. Like in a West Coast IPA, the body can be a little bit higher and they're not going to seem sweet. I was worried, oh, 1018, this is going to be too much, but it's got, you know, it's not just insanely soft and it's not watery. You wouldn't want this to be watery. It's got some body along with that, the mouthfeel that you get from the haze and the, you know, but yeah, I do use, again, I kept the acidulated malt that I added to it the last time, which I understand stabilizes the haze a little bit. And it's been working well for me. I didn't add a whole lot of it to start with. It's only a quarter pound in a 2.5 gallon batch. So I think that's enough to, I don't need to up that. I didn't really change the malt bill at all. I just added the other hops pretty much. And so, yeah, I just used Y East London Ale 3, you know, pretty much everything else the same. So the gravity and adding those two other hops were the main differences. I used the same amount of calcium chloride. I used mostly distilled water with a little bit of filtered tap water just to give some more, a little bit of minerals in there with the calcium chloride. But yeah, kind of the same one I've been making. And I'm happier with it now than I was like a month ago. So I don't know that I can let it go months and months and have it still be really good.
It's interesting because if you and I are getting sort of a different hop flavor, more of aggressive bite at the end than Char is, that does sort of go with your palate. I do think you tend to like those more aggressive IPAs.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Is that factual?
I'm very probably desensitized to hops because like the more and more like sometimes it's not enough. And you know,
sure. Yeah.
You've had a lupulin threshold shift.
Yeah, sure, man. I'm thinking more in terms of like BSDM or something where you're just, you know, you're the leather daddy of the beer world right now.
Either that or it's the COVID. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't lose my taste or anything, but
yeah.
Thankfully, knock on wood. I'm so glad no longer term symptoms on that. But
COVID is Cooper's leather daddy.
Yeah. I'm so glad we're drinking a beer from your house, too. How long ago was that? That was like 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been back at work and tested negative for well over a week now. So, right. Or yeah, but yeah, it's
yeah, all right.
We're good.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, all right.
Yeah,
I'm sure Char sanitized it for you.
No, of course not.
I did no such thing because I was dry. Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
He pulled it out of his anus.
Yeah,
like, I didn't pour it actually in my anus.
You might want to cool
anus
down.
Adjacent.
Well, sure. You have a pouch. You built a pouch. I get it.
A European comfort pouch.
Well, what do you think? I mean, you know, what do you want to tell people, Cooper? What's your take? What's the top two takeaways of home brewing a hazy IPA at home for our listeners?
Well,
because we're not getting too into the weeds because you've already done it before. Again, it's the third time. And, you know, we're sort of like personal with it. You're especially you and I'm trying to sit in for you and I don't know as much. So. Why don't we start with a couple tips? Give me two top ones, please.
Well, you know, London 3 yeast, of course, use. I think there's something to the, you know, acidifying the mash a little bit to retain that haze. And a brewmaster from a local area brewery here gave me that tip, a brewery in Tracy. So, yeah, I think that's some good stuff there. But yeah, use a shit ton of oats and wheat and some good hops that smell nice and keep oxygen out of the way. There's five tips for you. But yeah, rice hulls are your friend because you gotta all that you don't want a stuck mash, all that oats and all that gummy wheat and stuff.
No, man, who wants that shit?
You know, you need it to flow. But I'm kind of owning the kind of lazy brewing thing a little bit. But an earlier version, I think I called it a lazy hazy.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And I was just like, well, I'm just like, but actually,
speaking of lazy, let me stop you there. Let me take a quick break.
Go.
And we'll come back. We'll just sort of clarify what the hell you're talking about. And then we'll get out of here. So hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. All right, Cooper, what is it? Give me the TLDR on the lazy brewing technique you're doing.
Well, we had during pandemic, we had the simple homebrewing guys come on, you know, Denny and Drew, to our homebrew club meeting, our virtual homebrew club meetings.
Okay, and they are very simple guys. You're right.
Con, Drew Beecham. Yeah. And one of the nicest things that I took out of that was just, you don't need to use a freaking stir plate. Just get a proper can, dump it into a growler with the water that you add to the proper can.
What do you mean proper can? What are you talking about? What is that?
It's a brand name, not the P-R-O-P-E-R
it's
word.
It's basically canned wort, P-R-O-P-P-E-R. And you can buy it by the four pack. It's just concentrated wort. You can dilute it to like a 10, 30 something gravity by adding one bottle of just water, clean water, you know, open a bottle of just, you know, spring water. Mm-hmm. Pour that into the growler with that, dump your yeast in that, shake the heck out of it until it's, you know, foamed up. And
why wouldn't you just buy dry malt extract and do it yourself? Save a bunch of money.
Because it's easy. You don't have to put something on your stove and boil it. You just
open
it, you sanitize the top of the can.
I will always do a stir plate. That's all. I'll always be a stir plate guy.
You crack it, and it's just so easy. And I don't have to think too far ahead. And it's just like,
works for you.
I find that as I became more advanced in my brewing and I added more things, all those things that I added took more time, and it started to take some of the fun out of brewing. Yeah. And, you know, as I had less time after I had kids, it's like, well, I don't have time to do all that stuff. I can't do that now.
No, you can't.
But yeah, you know, like, do I want to go back to extract brewing? No, not necessarily. I still want to do all grain. So I got the Pico, and you know, that helps save time, and I can monitor the brew. You know, I like the Pico Z a lot better than the Zymatic. And then just some of these other things I don't need to, you know, just worry about only the things that you have to, is what I think. And it's not necessarily about being lazy. It's just about bringing back the fun and just doing what you feel is important and still making good beer.
You know?
Yeah. I retract my hard line comment about the stir plate.
Yeah.
I will be reborn on that hill that I died on.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We're talking about this because I was on the last Brew Strong episode, actually two episodes.
Wow.
One that published yesterday. I think it published yesterday. Anyway, to Q&A. It's only one episode. It's Q&A. And I was sitting there with Jamil, and someone in the chat asked, what were the lessons that he learned as a professional brewer that he brought to his home brewing? Because apparently he's like home brewing now again because he's retired. Right. And, you know, he goes, I don't know if I learned anything. You know, it's sort of like vice versa, where I learned a lot about home brewing and then I brought it to commercial brewing and sort of got muddled. But he's like, now, actually, I said most of that. But anyway, he's like, now I just don't worry about shit. Like I barely weigh things out. I round up with my math. I don't take a starting gravity. Like I don't care. I'm so much more relaxed and calm about it. And I'm having much more fun doing that. And my point was like, it's funny because as home brewers, we like to go, oh, what do the pros do? I got to do that. Yep. And you want to emulate all the professionals. But along with that comes sort of that stress of that pressure to write everything down, be exact. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, we sort of lose focus on that's if you want to enter competitions and you want to be repetitive. If you're just brewing to have fun, don't do any of that.
Yeah.
Don't do it. If you want to learn how to fix your mistakes, then you got to do some of that. But if you're just brewing a one-off or you'd like it, whatever, it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter. It's just interesting to to hear people sort of come to that conclusion at the same time.
Yeah. After brewing as long as he has, he knows how to keep things clean. He knows what's important and yeah. He can just relax and kind of watch the stuff happen and be creative. And that's good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. Be creative. He's literally brewing bitters and lagers and that's it. Like that's all he's interested in doing. It's just. Because I got to that's where I got the recipe for the ESB because I'm like, oh, well, now you've sort of inspired me to brew, man. What recipe did you use? And he goes, literally 8 pounds of Golden Promise, half a pound of Crystal 45, 3/4 ounce Fuggles because he has a Brewzilla also. So it's like 3/4 ounce Fuggles, 3/4 ounce BKG at boil and then done. The rest at, 5 minutes left to, West Yorkshire yeast, ferment at 68. Done. I'm like, easy, all right. Bro. And to your point about, having kids and whatever, that's why I love the Brewzilla, and people were poo-pooing the Zymatic when it first came out. Like, that's not real. That's not real brewing, guys. You got to really burn yourself and you got to look at the burners and you got to touch the water. And it's like, fuck you. Still real brew. It doesn't. Who cares? You know what? Yes, it's not real brewing. OK, fine. Sure. You feel better about yourself. That's fine. I'll allow that to happen. I don't give a shit. I am not winning a fucking medal for how brutal I can be to myself during brew day. I'm just having fun. I don't care.
What? Yeah. If you can brew good beer in a Mr. Beer kit, you use that. Use whatever you want.
If you like it, use it.
Makes
yes.
You happy.
It's funny because this hobby can definitely be very judgmental. It can be a very judgmental hobby. Yeah. At times, and you got to really sort yourself out, especially when you're learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good stuff, Coop. I appreciate it, man. And hopefully for the next show, I'll have some ESB. So then I can do youth.
Yeah.
I can sit there.
And less IPA to drink.
Dude. Oh my God. That'd be great.
You could bottle one of those ESBs for me, like right now. And then a month later, bottle some for Coop.
Yeah. And I'll go, sorry, Shari, the bottle exploded because it's not done fermenting.
Shit happens.
It really does, man. It really does.
Bottle held up well because I got a good score. Thank
sure,
you.
Man.
Thank you both for that.
Of course, man.
I know you're not trying to blow smoke up my ass here.
I'm not trying. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
If you want to be on the show, email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and he'll get you on the schedule. And you can get your lovely beer here, drinking by us. We'll rent your beer, and we'll pee it out later, and it'll be a lot of fun.
We won't talk to you about the peeing part afterwards, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you want, sort of like a chain of custody thing, that's extra. I'll tell you about that later.
That's maybe Dr. Urine Analysis, which is a different show and a different network, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. OnlyFan. All right, everyone. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Until next time. We'll see you later.